Welcome back through the Word to Nahum chapter 2. In the previous chapter, Nahum has proclaimed the Lord's grand plan to defeat evil once and for all. The Lord will restore his people and his planet. No human civilization, not even Assyria, the ultimate evil representative, will be able to withstand the Lord's good plans for his world. For the faithful in Judah, Nahum's message about the Lord of the Exodus striding to their rescue to defeat evil couldn't have come at a better time. God's beleaguered remnant in Judah needed this message in order to hold on to faithfulness and hope. Both the foreign and domestic pressures against the worship of Yahweh were reaching crisis proportions. The year is about 660 BC. Globally, Ashurbanipal is at the height of his power, extending the Assyrian Empire's reach south through Judah's territory to Egypt. And he's recently demolished the ancient city of Thebes in 663 BC, not to be rebuilt for 9 more years. What hope is there for Jerusalem and Judah, so vulnerable by comparison? For those who worshipped Yahweh in Judah, it was easy to feel swallowed up, not only by Assyria's political and cultural dominance, but by her swaggering certainty of the superiority of her gods. And at home, life in Judah for the faithful remnant isn't much better. For the past 25 years, Manasseh has blamed Assyria's devastation of Judah on his father Hezekiah and his eradication of idolatry. As a result, Manasseh has led an all-out campaign to return Judah to its pagan practices, both ancient and popular. Completely unhinged from the Lord, the nation of Judah has flipped good and evil upside down. Listen as the chronicler describes Judah's cultural moment in 2 Chronicles 33. Manasseh had rebuilt the high places his father had demolished. He also erected altars to the Baals and made Asherah poles. He bowed down to all the starry hosts and worshipped them. He built altars in the temple of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, "My name will remain in Jerusalem forever." In both courts of the Lord, he built altars to all the starry hosts. He sacrificed his children in the fire in the valley of Ben-Hinnom, practiced divination and witchcraft, sought omens and consulted mediums and spiritists. He led Judah and the people of Jerusalem astray, so that they did more evil than the nations the Lord had destroyed before the Israelites. The nation of Judah and its people are adrift from the Lord, turning to anything and everything in attempts to manipulate their idols to do them some good. Will this be the end of Judah's story, as it was for Israel? How on earth can Judah, a nation that's broken covenant with the Lord, fulfill her calling as Yahweh's servant nation to the nations of the world? Let's step back for a minute and listen in for a moment to Isaiah, a prophet whose ministry had so impacted the faithful during Hezekiah's reign. As a new generation of faithful Israelites meditate on Isaiah 40 and 41, we can begin to imagine their impassioned prayers arising to God from within Judah, now essentially an apostate nation. Lord, you call forth each one of the starry hosts by name. You marked off the heavens with the breadth of your hand. Surely the nations are like a drop in a bucket to you. You bring princes to naught and reduce the rulers of this world and their idols to nothing. Lord, show yourself mighty in our day, that Manasseh, Judah, and Assyria will know that you alone are the one true God. And like Isaiah, Nahum at the end of chapter 1 has announced good news. The Lord will not sit idly by while the wicked swallow up the faithful. The Lord is striding on the winds as he did in the Exodus. He is coming to defeat the one who plots evil against the Lord and devises wicked plans. God's judgment of hurricane proportions against evil in his world is about to make landfall with this massive first stop at Nineveh, the capital of Assyria's violent empire. Let's join Nahum in verse 1. An attacker advances against you. Guard the fortress. Watch the road. Brace yourselves. Marshal all your strength. Can you hear the taunt in Nahum's words? The Lord is sending an attacker against this empire that's built itself up on violent conquest. So what should the Ninevite leaders do to protect themselves? Nahum issues 4 rapid commands. Guard the fortress. That's their impregnable walled city of Nineveh. Watch the road to see their attackers advancing against them. Brace yourself. Get ready for impact. Marshal all your strength. Call together all the fighting power you've got. Like Elijah with the prophets of Baal, Nahum challenges Nineveh to a showdown. It's as if God is saying, "So, you're the undefeated ruler of the world, are you? Well then, let's just see what you've got." But compared to the Lord, it will be no battle at all. Verse 2. The Lord will restore the splendor of Jacob, like the splendor of Israel, though destroyers have laid them waste and have ruined their vines. I love this. Here's another glimpse of the Lord's comfort to Judah's faithful. He will restore the splendor of Jacob, like the splendor of Israel. Restoration for God's people is at the heart of God's judgment. But what are we to make about Nahum's odd use of names? Restore the splendor of Jacob, like the splendor of Israel. Aren't Jacob and Israel 2 names for the same people and nation? So what are we to make of Nahum's puzzle? Genesis 32 says that your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you've struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. And Jacob responded, "I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." Faced with Esau's approaching armed men, Jacob had come face to face with the consequences of his own sinfulness. So here's a clue Nahum wants us to ponder. Somehow, the attackers God is sending against Nineveh, the Babylonians and the Medes, will also bring the nation of Judah face to face with its own sinfulness. Somehow, Babylon will compel Judah once again to wrestle with God like Jacob did, until God's own people get a new character and a new name. Nahum doesn't tell us how that's all going to happen. We have to listen to Habakkuk to discover that. But somehow, God's judgment on Nineveh's evil will compel Judah to confront her own evil, so that God can begin to restore his blessing to Israel, and through Israel, to the whole world. But Nahum quickly shifts focus back to Nineveh's attackers. He describes them like a war correspondent reporting on the nightly news. Verse 3. The shields of the soldiers are red. The warriors are clad in scarlet. Remember, Nahum is prophesying about 660 BC. And within 50 years, by 612, the Medes and the Babylonians, both known for their red clothing and shields stained blood red, will join forces to besiege the city of Nineveh. The metal on the chariots flashes on the day they're made ready. The spears of juniper are brandished. The chariots storm through the streets, rushing back and forth through the squares. They look like flaming torches. They dart about like lightning. Listen as the Lord's hurricane of judgment wreaks havoc on the city. The chariots storm through the streets. They dart about like lightning. The newest military technology will be used against Nineveh. Chariot wheels equipped with blades to slice their opponents, and with fiery torches set alight to burn down the Ninevites' defenses. How will this great city stand up to the force of this attack? Verse 5. Nineveh summons her picked troops. She will attempt to defend the city with her best men. Yet, They stumble on their way. They dash to the city wall. The protective shield is put in place. Can you picture the chaos within the city? It will be a mad scramble to man their walls against the onslaught of the advancing armies. The river gates are thrown open and the palace collapses. It is decreed that Nineveh be exiled and carried away. Heavy rains and a storm surge will overflow the banks of the Tigris, demolishing Nineveh's river gates, eroding the foundations of the palace, giving the Medes and the Babylonians access to the city. Her female slaves moan like doves. Nineveh is like a pool whose water is draining away. Stop, stop, they cry, but no one turns back. Like the Titanic ship captain's famous quip, God himself couldn't sink this ship. Nineveh thought herself to be unconquerable. But the floodwaters will wash away her walls and let the Medes and the Babylonians overrun the city. Plunder the silver, plunder the gold. The supply is endless, the wealth from all its treasures. She's pillaged, plundered, stripped. Hearts melt, knees give way. Every face grows pale. In 612 BC, after a three-month-long siege, the Medes and the Babylonians will gorge themselves on Nineveh's treasures, looting the city for 2 months. Where now is the lion's den? The lion killed enough for his cubs, filling his dens with the prey. For Nahum, the declaration of this vision was a bold statement against a powerful oppressor. In 660 BC, at the height of Assyrian power, none of this seemed possible. But the Lord declares, I am against you. I will burn up your chariots, and the sword will devour your young lions. The voices of your messengers will no longer be heard. The Lord himself is against Nineveh. And like the fall of communism in 1989, which culminated in the unraveling of the Soviet Union, this attack against Assyria's nerve center will be the empire's fatal undoing. Within 50 years of Nahum's prophecy, Nineveh will be overthrown, and the Assyrian Empire will be history, toppled by the Medes and the Babylonians. And so ends chapter 2, with boastful Nineveh silenced in the aftermath of the storm. It's a sober warning that the Lord Almighty will have the final word. So read chapter 2 and be prepared to encounter the fierce comfort of the Lord.